Up next, the mysterious memristor. Electronic circuits have, well, they have till now, had three basic parts: the resistor, the capacitor, and the inductor, sort of like a coil. And back in the 1970s, a graduate student at UC Berkeley theorized that there was a fourth part to circuits, something he called the memristor. The memristor, the theory claimed, had properties that could not be explained by any of the other three elements in the circuit. Well, more than 35 years later, scientists at Hewlett-Packard have proven that the memristor exists. They found it, and its existence helps explain some of the strange results scientists have noticed over the years, particularly when they work with nanoscale circuits. Joining me now to talk more about it is Stan Williams. He is the HP Senior Fellow and Director of Information and Quantum Systems Lab at the Hewlett-Packard Company. He joins us from Palo Alto. Thank you for talking with us, Dr. Williams.
Thank you very much for having me, Ira.
You know, whenever I love to talk about this stuff, but whenever I talk about it, people say, I can't explain it. Can you make it so I can understand what a memristor is?
Well, a memristor is a contraction for memory resistor, and it has the very interesting and unusual property in that the resistance of the device changes depending upon how much current flowed through the device. And in fact, it depends upon the direction of current flow. If I push current through the device in one direction, the resistance of the device will increase, and if I turn it around and push the current through in the opposite direction, the resistance will decrease.
Wow. That is, so it works different in two different directions.
That's correct. It's a very unusual element. Considering the fact that we've known about the capacitor since about 1745, and both the resistor and the inductor were both discovered in the early 1800s, the fact that it took nearly 200 years for Leon Chua to even theorize that a memristor exists is, on the one hand, it's surprising, but when you look at its properties, perhaps it isn't so unusual. I mean, it's a very unusual type of device, and it has properties that, as you mentioned, really only strongly emerge when we get into the nanoscale size regime.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Well, that's what I was about to ask, why we haven't, you know, cared about this fourth piece before.
Well, frankly, it hasn't been that important in our traditional circuitry. Because this is a property that only strongly emerges as devices become very small, we've been able to build our circuits and operate them perfectly fine without actually having to include memristance as a part of our circuit models. But in fact, for at least 50 years, there have been lots of reports by scientists who have published papers in the literature who have seen funny things in their circuits, where they've looked at devices and found little loops in their current voltage traces that they see, or just funny stuff where they go out in voltage and measure a resistance and come back and it's different. And that hasn't been understood for the most part, or it's been described by some sort of ad hoc model as a perturbation on normal circuit properties, especially on capacitors. But in fact, Leon Chua showed that it's a true fundamental property of materials, and now that we're really getting into the nanoscale regime, it's becoming a lot more important and really is going to need to be considered explicitly in circuit design.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. You know, when in the old days when I used to make electronic circuits as a hobbyist, I could go buy a resistor, a capacitor, a coil. Can I go out and buy a mem resistor? Does it actually exist?
Well, I mean, if you come to our lab, we could give you one. And there are actually several other people who have built them without realizing that's what they were building.
Is that right?
Yes. As I mentioned, people have been observing this stuff for 50 years. So there's plenty of there's actually plenty of people who have built them, or at least built devices that have a strong memristance character.
Now a resistor has a unit called an ohm.
Correct.
What does a memristor have?
It's a real tongue twister, isn't it? Well, it turns out, interestingly enough, that the unit for the memristor is also the ohm. So it has the same units as resistance, but and as I said, the whole issue is that the resistance changes as a function of current, but it's a very different beast from a resistor.
Well, so if I put my little meter to measure the resistance on one side of it, and I switch it around to measure the other side, if I reverse the polarity, am I going to get the same reading?
It depends on the type of memristor. I mean, what you're describing there is a static measurement on a device, and so if you did that with a diode, you would get a different reading. So diodes are devices in which the resistance differs depending upon the polarity of the voltage attached to it. The difference about a memristor is that the resistance will change as a function of the amount of current that goes through it. So if you put your ohm meter on a memristor and you're flowing current through it, what you'll see is that the resistance will change with time.
So are you building circuits with this device now?
Yes, we are. We've been really kind of understood what we had about a year and a half ago. Before we actually published a paper on this, we knew that this was a very extraordinary claim, and so extraordinary claims require, shall we say, extraordinary verification. So
the old Carl Sagan.
Something like that, yes. And so we have worked very hard both on individual devices, simple circuits containing several memristors, and now even mixed circuits containing transistors and memristors in the same circuit to look at their properties and understand what they would be good for.
Yeah, you're not sure what they would be good for yet, huh?
Well, you know, my guess is that the real utilization of these things is going to come from some bright young person who's either, you know, still in high school or maybe even in college right now. But, you know, we've got some ideas of things that we're going to look at. And so one of those ideas actually involves what we call a non-volatile random access memory. And then another one involves what we call essentially a synaptic circuit.
Mm-hmm. And now I noticed that part of your title is that you work in the quantum systems lab.
That's correct.
This is not a quantum device, then. I mean, it doesn't behave quantumly, does it?
Well, in the quantum systems laboratory, which has been around in various guises for nearly 13 years at Hewlett-Packard, our primary claim to fame, in some sense, is that we can make very small things. And so the whole issue is that, of course, quantum mechanical properties emerge as you especially get into the nanoscale regime. Well, you know, not only did quantum properties emerge in some systems, but when we were looking at these nanoscale devices, we saw that memristance emerged. So really the common factor here is working at the nanometer scale.
We're talking today about the memristors on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News with Stan Williams of Hewlett-Packard. So let's see, there's some couple of really interesting questions. Let's get to them on the phone. Anshu in Elk Grove, California. Hi.
Hi there. I just wanted to ask your host, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask your host that does the Ohm's law change in quantum circuitry, or is there no valid Ohm's law because you got a voltage and you got a resistance and the current, they're all constant parameters, and if your voltage or current changes, your resistance still remains the same proportionally. So does that change in quantum circuitry, or it doesn't exist at all?
Yeah, can you use
enter off the air.
Yeah, can you use Ohm's law in the memristor?
All right. Ohm's law, of course, is the direct proportionality of current and voltage as expressed through resistance. Because memristance changes with amount of charge, it does not obey Ohm's law. So it's a non-linear element, we call it.
Mm-hmm.
So no, memristance has its own behavior, which you know, is a little bit hard to explain on the air, but for anyone who knows what a Lissajou figure is, I mean, what happens is that a memristor will have a current voltage characteristic that is a Lissajou figure.
Uh-huh.
In other words, it's loops. It looks like a bow tie or a figure eight instead of just a straight line.
So it's sort of like when it goes out, it doesn't come back in the same direction.
That's exactly correct. It goes out and comes back in a completely different place.
And in that difference there, is that where you can store information?
That's exactly correct, because you can think of it as what the memristor does is it somehow integrates over its history and carries with it the information about its history. So if you run current through it in one direction, you can increase the resistance, and you can call that a zero for the purposes of a computer. If you run current through it in the opposite direction, you can decrease the resistance, and you can call that a one. And because you can the memristor will remember its state, it will remember the resistance even after you turn off the current, you then have what's called a non-volatile element. It will remember its state long after you turn the current off.
So you can keep computer memory theoretically alive, so to speak. You can pick up where you left off before.
That's exactly correct. So one of the ideas that we've been positing is having a computer that never has to be booted up, or perhaps only booted up once. Because with a memristor-based memory, when you turn the computer off, you will all of the information that you had about your operating system and your various applications will just be stored right there and will be immediately available as soon as you turn the computer back on.
So it can actually save power.
Absolutely right. I mean, that's one of the interesting things that memristors offer, is the ability to dramatically actually decrease the amount of power that's required in a variety of integrated circuits, both memory circuits and perhaps even logic circuits.
So you can shrink them down, too, because they don't need much power.
Well, that's the other interesting issue is that a memristor is a passive device. It doesn't require power to operate. But if you want to mimic the properties of a memristor, it takes a very large number of transistors.
Right.
So in principle, we should be able to look through our existing transistor circuits and essentially pull out significant numbers of transistors and replace groups of transistors by a single memristor.
And how, I got about 30 seconds, Doctor. How far away are we from doing that?
Well, you know, the standard answer is somewhere on the 5-year time frame. We've actually turned the corner already from pure research into development. We're making actual circuits with transistors and memristors now, and then we'll just see how long it takes for them to appear in something that's useful.
Stan, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much, Ira.
Stan Williams is Hewlett-Packard, HP Senior Fellow and Director of the Information and Quantum Systems Lab at the HP company. Our program is produced by Karen Vergoth and Senior Producer Annette Heist. Charles Breckquist is our director. Flora Lichtman is our producer for digital media. And Shuman Ma is our Metcalf Fellow. We had help today from Second Life, Lynn Cullins, Dave Andrews, Jeff Corbin, and the University of Denver. Neil Rausch is at the boards here in New York, and Josh Rokeson is our technical director. If you'd like to write us, send your letters to Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, room 306, New York, New York, 10036. Also, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Excuse me. And we're blogging and podcasting, and folks in Second Life are still there with their sci-fi T-shirts on, and you can join a discussion going on there. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.